Throughout Michigan's history, the state's African-American population is often portrayed as an urban population, but that depiction overlooks a part of Michigan's history. Many blacks settled in rural areas before and after the Civil War. In 1960, Cass County was home to over 1,500 blacks. Surprisingly, that's just under the number of African-Americans found in Wayne County at the time. Dr. Benjamin Wilson is an emeritus professor of history at Western Michigan University. He's the author of the book Black Eden, The Idlewild Community, and he's an expert on black rural history. Dr. Wilson sat down with current state's Emmanuel Berry, and as a precaution, he used some colorful language to explain to her why a native Floridian took interest in Michigan's rural African-American heritage.
First of all, I'm from Florida. I was born in Tampa, Florida, raised in Fort Lauderdale, and then my parents decided, since I was Catholic, they'd punish me and send me to an all-boys Catholic college in Kansas. But while I was living in Florida, I knew of three cities in Michigan. Detroit, because of Motown. Battle Creek, because I watched cartoons on Saturday morning. And the last city I knew of was a place called Lansing, because my uncle worked as a chemist at Oldsmobile. As a matter of fact, he was one of the first African-American chemists at Oldsmobile. And I always thought that Michigan was an urban state. Then while I was at Michigan State, I think it was like in 1970 or 71, while working on my doctorate, I took a course from one of the best teachers that Michigan State ever had, hell of a scholar by the name of Dr. Ruth Hamilton. Ruth taught a course called Rural Sociology. And about six of us took a ride from East Lansing, urban East Lansing, okay, and ended up in a place called Vandalia, which is in Cass County. Decidedly rural. And the first thought I had was Demopolis, Alabama, because, you know, here I am thinking that all black folk in Michigan were basically urban. As a matter of fact, a lot of sociologists, when they write pieces on blacks as if we were an urban people only. And so while driving through Vandalia, I began to see all these black folks say, what the hell are they doing here? And at that point, my interest was spurred. Like, why in the heck would anybody in their right mind would want to move to a rural area? In the process of doing my dissertation, I began to find out these strange numbers of black people living in places like Kalamazoo County, Cass County, Calhoun County, up north, Macosta. And I began to investigate other places in Michigan. So I just can't understand why these folks are moving here. And then during the pre-Civil War years, I checked out the Underground Railroad routes, and wherever there were Underground Railroad routes, there were always black populations there. Hold on, I'll go up and get this map so we can look at it.
Yeah, let's
okay, see that. Okay. All right. One of the first research papers I did for a history class in Michigan State, it was on the black presence in Ingham County before the Civil War.
What was it like?
Here's Ingham, 42 black people.
This is a map from 1860.
Yeah, 1860. All right, 42 black folks in Ingham County. Now, imagine this one brother up here in Antrim. But in cases like that, white folks made him an honorary white person because the number was so small. Look at Emmett County.
We've got 934
black people in Emmett County in 1860. As a matter of fact, they were there long enough to start a little village. It's now one of Michigan's registered black ghost towns. It's called Freedom. Now, in 1870, those brothers were gone.
Where'd they go?
Detroit? I don't know. I got the hell out of Dodge. But you notice, wherever you have these underground railroad routes, and there were six, according to Blanche Cogent, about six major routes in the Michigan area. Now, a lot of people attribute it to the Quaker presence, which is a bunch of crap, in my opinion.
Why is that?
It's because Quakers were no different than any other European American in the pre-Civil War years in Michigan. Everybody talk about how the Quakers helped slaves to escape. Bull. It was a symbiotic relationship. I help you if you help me. Okay, now, imagine now, I'm a Quaker. Okay, not the radical Hicksite Quakers. Now, the radical Hicksite Quakers, but those were the Quakers who refused to eat or use any product associated with slave labor. And they were the ones who were actually involved in the Underground Railroad operation. However, it was still a symbiotic relationship. I knew Emmanuel was running away from slavery. I would help her, but I also have 40 acres that need clearing. Okay, in some cases, you see something developing like a runaway slave sharecropper kind of relationship. And coincidentally, in some cases, especially in southwestern Michigan, you had quite a few Hicksite Quakers living in the area. So that would explain the presence of a lot of these black folk here. In addition to it, these routes, these Underground Railroad routes that we see highlighted, there were tons of other routes. Tons of other routes. And you can understand why Michigan was so loaded with Underground Railroad routes, because right on the other side of the Detroit River is Canada.
Looking down at Cass County and looking over at Wayne County right now, mm-hmm. So we have, Cass has, you know, 1,500. And Wayne has 1,600, and I would never think that those would be as close as they are in number.
Oh, yeah. But the deal is, the reason why Cass is because of the, look how many routes that cross the county. In addition to it, you had a sizable Quaker population, and some of those Quakers, not all of them, were anti-slavery, and they believed in justice. Wayne County has that number because you're only a spit away from Canada. But Emmett, with 934, a lot of the slave catchers who were like bounty hunters, they were aware of Cass County, aware of Wayne County, because heck, in the 1840s, by 1850, we're talking about maybe three or four slave raids that occurred here with Kentuckians. We don't know how many occurred in Wayne County, but it wasn't unusual for slave catchers to just be lurking there, okay, for these areas, waiting for fugitives to show up. A lot of the brothers decided, I'll just keep going further up. And some ended in Emmett County.
African Americans, what do they do in these communities? Are they farmers?
A lot of them, especially in southwestern Michigan, a lot of them were farm workers. They might find this one Hicksite Quaker who was cooler than the rest of the Quakers. And this individual would help this individual who started off as a farm worker acquire, you know, pay him a little cash, and eventually they would begin to purchase land. At one time, around the late 1860s, there was a guy by the name of Bill Allen. They called him Hog Bill. He paid more taxes than anybody in Cass County, and he was an African American. And of course, you know why they named him Hog, because he raised hogs. Okay, then you had a guy there in Cass County by the name of C.W. Bunn. C.W. Bunn eventually purchased land and became the owner of a sawmill. There was a guy by the name of Hawks. They called him the Hay King because he had accumulated land and started purchasing hay. I'm not growing hay. So they either worked as farm workers or farmers. Some of them, if they lived in close proximity to a big city like Kalamazoo, they would come to Kalamazoo and work a little bit and then go back home. But the majority of them were farm workers. As a matter of fact, at one time up to 1920, I think southwestern Michigan had a large number of black farmers. And those black farmers, believe it or not, were growing blueberries. Now, we're not talking about black folks who own acres in excess of 120. We're talking about eventually folks would acquire 4 or 5 acres, cultivate it, and with the proceeds, if they make a profit, buy some more land, and then some more land, and then some more land. And of course, at this particular time, to save money, mom and dad, especially dad, made sure he had about 14, 15 kids, okay, because the kids would now be farm laborers. I remember I used to do that kind of stuff. Of course, I only came from a family of two. My father came from a family of 14, and my grandfather, Sumner, okay, had a little farm, and I thought we were always going there for summer vacations. Oh, hell no.
You got put to work.
You got put to work. So we're talking about farm laborers, farmers, and in some cases, they were in the service industry, being domestics, okay, or being chauffeurs, we're talking about in the 1920s or so.
What happened to those communities? What happened to the communities of rural African Americans? And you know, when you go up north, when I was a kid, we'd go up north, and my dad, if he saw another black person, there was, you know, first shock and then excitement for that moment. And you know, those communities aren't really there. What happened to these rural communities?
Just like throughout all of urban industrialized world, a lot of young kids are now being lured to the city. They leave the farm. And if you go back to the rural areas, you find basically the average age of people like 60 to 80 still on the farm. The young kids left, moved to the city. And as a result, you got that disconnect. And since there's no family that I have in the city, I join another family called a gang. You find that same phenomenon occurring in Cape Town, South Africa, in Johannesburg, South Africa, in Harare, Zimbabwe, when folks leave the rural area, usually where they were born, they leave the grandmothers, grandparents, and you go to that rural area of village and you see just elderly people. The young people move to the city. They move to the city because they think the city is where the opportunities are. So in some cases, you see the population of rural black communities dwindling because the young people are leaving.
When you look at African-American history and the lack of it being portrayed in mainstream history books or in mainstream in general, do you feel like it's important to write African-Americans into history?
Oh, hell yeah. But here's the deal. When you write us into history, don't write me in as a second hand. No, I don't want to be the supporting actor or actress. No person should be supporting actor or actress when you're writing history, because everybody who lives down here leave a historical dent. Sometimes, have you been in a class when people talk about great men and great? How the hell you know who's great or who's not great? Do you become a great man in history if your name is R.E. Olds? You know, they usually always write these history books about people who are wealthy as hell, treacherous as hell, inventors, common people. As a matter of fact, they've gotten to the point, they just called people the common man. I ain't no common man. My name is Ben Wilson. If you can write about R.E. Olds, write about him also, Ben Wilson, because he made a historical contribution down here also.
Why is it important to share this story of rural African-American history for you?
Why is it important? I never thought of it. I never did. I just figured if you were interested in the lives of a group of people, you should go beyond the urban area, because the black experience is not only a urban experience, but it's also a rural experience. I mean, what the hell? A lot of the brothers who are now living in the cities came from someplace that was rural in the American South. Sometimes we can get so cityfied and urban and elite that we lose our connections with the South. You know what I'm talking about? So I figure that if you're going to talk about the African-American experience, I don't give a crap what time period, you got to realize that not every brother settled in the urban area.
Thank you so much for talking to me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all.